Sorry, am I interrupting anything?
Not really.
You look absolutely beautiful. You truly belong here with us among the clouds.
Thank you.
Would you join me for a little refreshment? Everyone's invited, of course.
Our first guest likely doesn't need an introduction, but that's Billy Dee Williams as Lando Calrissian in The Empire Strikes Back. The debonair actor and artist has spent almost 80 years on screen and on stage. After a successful run on Broadway, Billy starred as Chicago Bear Gale Sayers in the TV movie Brian's Song. 55 million people watched it. And I think it's safe to say that at least 54 million of them were crying their eyes out at the end. Billy's big break came in Lady Sings the Blues alongside Diana Ross. And of course, his adventures once upon a time in a galaxy far, far away. And Billy is now putting his legacy on the page. His memoir is called What Have We Here? Portraits of a Life. That title, of course, is a reference to his suave introduction as Lando. He sat down with us to talk about his incredible life and career, his groundbreaking work on Broadway, and his beginnings as an artist.
My sister and I went to music and art high school. And from music and art, I got a scholarship to the National Academy. And what I learned, art is gentle. Art is incisive. Allowing you yourself to use your five senses, you know, seeing sense, smelling sense, touching sense, hearing sense. It allows you to look at things, to be a sponge, to be receptive. It allows you to appreciate.
Yeah, very well said. Why did you decide to leave painting to pursue acting?
Well, I've been acting since I was 6.5 years old. I was on Broadway with in a Kurt Weill musical with his wife, La Helena. So it was introduced to me, and it has continued throughout my life. I never really pursued it. It just sort of pursued me.
You became good friends with the great writer and civil rights activist, James Baldwin. Can you tell us about your friendship with him?
Well, Jimmy, when I met Jimmy, he was at Columbia Pictures writing a script on Malcolm X's life. And I was doing a play on Broadway. I was in a musical on Broadway with Leslie Uggams, Hallelujah Baby. And he saw me in the play. And that's how we met. He approached me and asked me to consider playing Malcolm X. And I said, great, that's how we became friends.
In 1970, you auditioned for a made-for-TV movie called Brian's Song. It was based on the real-life friendship between the Chicago Bears teammates Gale Sayers and Brian Piccolo. How did your audition go?
Well, it worked very nicely. I mean, I was in a very kind of a low place in my life. And when I was asked to audition, I was in the right frame of mind. And so it worked very well. Of course, Jimmy Kahn and I met. It was an immediate chemistry. It was one of those moments that was meant to be.
Yeah,
that whole experience to me was an act of love, an absolute act of love.
Yeah, and you were both you and James Caan were great in it. The movie has this famously emotional locker room scene. Can you tell us about that scene and what you did to prepare for it?
You learn about what their experiences were between each other, and you observe and listen. I worked with Buzz Kulick, one of the best directors I've ever worked with. Of course, I read the I Am Third book based on Brian Piccolo's life and his relationship with Gale Sayers. You know, you just pick up as much information as possible. You know, it was, as I said, it was meant to be. It was one of those experiences where I didn't really have to find ways to motivate myself. I mean, everything was there.
We just got word that Brian Piccolo is. That he's sick, very sick. And he looks like a... I never play football again.
55 million people watched Brian's song when it aired. Both you and James Caan received Best Actor Emmy nominations, but neither of you won, which is, I find, very surprising. Why do you think that was the case?
I have no idea, really, specifically, but I thought it was a tragedy. I mean, they gave it to an English actor for the Six Wives of Henry VIII. And I never understood why. I'm assuming that they couldn't decide whether they give me the Emmy or give Jimmy the Emmy. I always felt they should have given the two of us.
Yeah,
the
I agree.
Emmy.
Yeah.
It was such a monumental experience for so many people in this country, which lasted for a lot of years.
Yeah, I still have vivid memories of reading it. And as you point out in your memoir, Brian's song also underscored an important message about the power of art and movies to affect people. And that fact that your movie accomplished something special by getting tens of millions of people to see color and then to see past it, to see all the humanity we all share, that's a very important and message.
Yeah, that's a monument. That's monumental.
Yeah.
I'm always attracted to that kind of message. I get a little bit tired of people taking sides. I mean, I think that the life experience is much more than a question of taking sides. It's melding all of the colors and shades and gradations together. And I think that's a lot more fun for me,
mm-hmm.
to do things that are innovative, to do things that challenge your perception of things.
Very well said. Motown founder Berry Gordy signed you to a management contract after Brian's song aired. And Berry then cast you in Lady Sings the Blues, which starred Diana Ross. How did starring in this film change your career?
Well, I became a real romantic figure on the screen. Which is a really heroic romantic figure with a kind of vulnerability, which I managed to use in playing these characters.
I never met nobody like you before. You know, you kind of make me speechless.
I mean, really.
Right. I don't know what to do with myself. Like you said, I don't even know what to do with my hands and everything. You know? You sure have pretty teeth when you smile.
Marcello Mastroianni was one of my favorite actors because I loved his vulnerability. And I always tried to bring a kind of vulnerability to all of these kind of heroic figures.
Right. And I think that's why what makes you such a compelling, such an excellent actor is because you're not trying to do the same thing over and over. You're always looking to break new ground.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Oh, thank you. Of course, you would go on to play Berry Gordy in the miniseries about the Jackson 5. Was that awkward for you at all in any way?
No, I thought I was the perfect person for that because I knew very, very, very well. He has a wonderful take on life, and I wanted to kind of express that. It's very whimsical. There's something very whimsical about Berry.
We want to get...
Barry?
Yes.
A serious step. You got a job?
Daddy.
Oh, yeah, I forget it. You work for me.
Daddy, be good.
Okay. Listen, Hazel.
Okay, I will.
Why don't you let me and Jermaine speak to each other alone for a minute?
And I thought I was the only one that could really pull it off.
I think you're right. Absolutely. Yeah, and whimsy's a good thing. We need more whimsy in the world, as far as I'm concerned. You made history when you were cast as the first Black character in the Star Wars universe. You, of course, played Lando Calrissian. How did you go about creating this character?
Well, again, when I heard the name Calrissian, I said, wow, that's Armenian. And that was, I thought that was the one perfect introduction and an opportunity to broaden the character. And then, of course, when I saw the cape, I thought that was Errol Flynn right there. You know, the combination of those two things really kind of gave me an impetus. It really kind of colored the what I wanted to do with the with Lando.
What are you doing here?
Ah, repairs. I thought you could help me out.
What have you done to my ship?
Your ship?
Hey,
remember, you lost her to me fair and square.
And how you doing, Chewbacca? You still hanging around with this loser?
Hello, what have we here?
Welcome, I'm Lando Calrissian. I'm the administrator of this facility. And who might you be?
Leia.
Welcome, Leia.
I felt he was like at a particular juncture in human history where people were past the whole question of one thing or the other.
Yeah, things weren't so binary. You were part of another big franchise. You played Harvey Dent in Tim Burton's Batman, but you viewed this as a missed opportunity. Why?
Well, I wanted to really do Two-Face, but they decided to take a different direction with that. But as I always say, you win some, lose some.
Did you have a vision in your mind of, like, did you have the chance to think how about how you were going to play Harvey Dent?
Not really. I didn't get a chance to.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
I mean, I started out with an image which was based on one of my favorite politicians of all time, Adam Clayton Powell. Yeah, he was a bigger-than-life kind of character, and he was a congressman in New York City.
Now, our new district attorney, Harvey Dent, will carry out that promise. Harvey?
Thank you, Mayor Bohr. Thank you. The people of Gotham City, I'm a man of few words. But those words will count, and so will my actions.
But after that, I never got a chance to really explore it. I don't know really what I would have done with it.
Yeah. What impact has writing your memoir had on the way you think about your life and your career?
Well, you know, I'm 86 years old, going on 87. And I'm at that stage in my life where I'm thinking about legacy and all that kind of silliness. I just thought, you know, I've had such an interesting life. I've discovered over the years that there are an awful lot of people who have been interested in my career. So I thought it was time to really kind of talk about things that most people don't normally hear about. I mean, people, little brown-skinned people like me, are generally talked about in terms of coming out of slavery and things of that nature. I decided I wanted to talk about my life in a much, much more interesting way.
Yeah, and you did that. You've had a to quote from the famous movie, you've had a wonderful life. And it's wonderful to read about it. So thank you so much for writing the book. And thank you for taking the time to talk to us today. And one more time, I'll congratulate you on What Have We Here? Portraits of a Life. It's a very interesting and inspiring book.
Well, I end the book by saying chandelier.
Yeah.
I got that's an expression I got from, one of the great jazz musicians, Lester Young, back in the bebop days. I use that expression anyway, so chandelier.
Billy Dee Williams is an actor and artist. He's also the author of What Have We Here? Portraits of a Life. Find out more about Billy and his career at WPR.org/beta.
And his openness to influence by music that isn't North American probably makes his music quite unique as well.
Coming up, MD Dunn on one of Canada's greatest songwriters and guitarists, Bruce Cockburn. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.